Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our first quarter update. Now, it's only been, I think, 8 weeks since we presented the full year results, but Neil and I wanted to take the opportunity to kind of give you an update on how Q1 trading had gone, and just as importantly, our operational progress through the first quarter as well. I'm going to leave plenty of time for questions, but first, I just want to run through what I see as the three key messages from Q1. So firstly, the motor markets continue to be impacted by lockdown restrictions in Q1, but there are signs that pricing has stabilised during April, and we're well placed as consumer behaviour normalises. So with the first quarter in kind of full lockdown, claims trends in Q1 were in line with those that we talked about at the full year results, with claims frequency reduced as we've seen in previous lockdowns, and severity remaining higher than normal. So we've seen frequency pick up a little bit in April as lockdown restrictions have started to ease, but it still remains well below pre-pandemic levels. Now, while these trends have provided a tailwind to earnings, they've also driven more testing market conditions, and that's led to an acceleration in market premium deflation in the quarter as the market took a range of views, I think, on the trajectory of claims frequency going forward for the rest of the year. And that's been exacerbated by continued lower risk mix due to fewer new car sales and fewer new drivers entering the market. So against that backdrop, we've maintained our disciplined underwriting. Against a non-COVID comparative from 2020, we saw a 10% drop in motor gross written premium, which is broadly in line with the market. But we have focused on protecting the quality of the book, with average premiums reduced by 5% against Q1 2020, compared with the market reduction of around 8%. So as we progress through the year and claims frequency increases towards normal levels, we expect the heightened claim severity to put upwards pressure on premiums. It's not surprising, therefore, to see in our latest market data the April prices were flat on March. So having protected the quality of our book, we remain well placed as the market recovers. My second message is that we continue to build momentum in areas that are less impacted by the pandemic, with strong growth in both home and commercial. In home, the new business markets remain buoyant, and we've delivered growth in own brand policy count and premiums, driven by strong trading in both direct and PCW channels. And the commercial business has had an incredibly strong quarter, delivering over 15% premium growth in both direct and broker channels, despite the strong comparative. In NIG, the 16% GWP growth was across all categories. It's the best first quarter growth in over 10 years, reflecting improved pricing sophistication. And it follows on from the excellent customer service maintained throughout the pandemic disruption. And within this 16%, rate carry was around 6%. Commercial direct grew premiums by 15% as tradesmen, landlord and van under the DL4B brand all delivered premium growth through a combination of policy count and strong rate carry. While Churchill for Business has had a record-breaking quarter across all its products, delivering 75% GWP growth year on year. At the full year, we said commercial was the furthest along its transformation journey. And as you can see from the numbers, it's yielding great results, which is both exciting when you look across to personal lines, but also reflects our continued focus and investment in the SME segment. And our third message is this. We've continued to make great progress on our transformation to be a data and technology-enabled insurer while building on our existing strengths. The rollout of our new motor platform is almost complete. We're now live on all brands and all channels, with Churchill fully live and Direct Line following fast behind. I'm really pleased that the latest rollout for Churchill New Business was completed in just 4 weeks. A clear sign that we're delivering at pace. And this is a crucial step towards delivering the improvements in our trading, as well as unlocking operating efficiencies. It's still early days in terms of the rollout, but we're already seeing some of the benefits of the new system come through for Churchill, which is incredibly encouraging and testament to the broader transformation agenda. We've also expanded our own garage repair network with the acquisition of our 22nd Auto Services Repair Centre, helping us expand our market-leading claims capabilities further. And this will become increasingly important as customers start driving again. I said at our full year results that 2021 was a pivotal year in our transformation journey, and I'm really delighted with the progress we've already made this year, and we're only a third of the way through. So overall then, how do I feel about Q1 and the business going forward? Well, we've made great progress. Our motor system's almost complete and the benefits are starting to come through. Motor market prices have recently stabilised, and we continue to take share in both home and commercial. I think today we've demonstrated that we're building an increasingly competitively advantaged business for future sustainable growth, and we reiterate our existing targets. As lockdown restrictions ease and with our transformation program on track, I feel the business is well positioned heading into the next trading period. Now I'm going to leave it there in terms of comments, but I'll hand back to Cathy to open the line for questions. Thanks, Cathy.
Thank you, Penny. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star followed by 1 on your telephone keypad now. If you change your mind, please press star followed by 2 to withdraw your questions. If you're streaming from web browsers, kindly press the flag icon to ask a question. In order to let more investors to ask their questions, each investor are limited to ask maximum 2 questions only. When preparing to ask your questions, please ensure your phone is unmuted locally. So first, we have a question from Jonathan Denham from Morgan Stanley. Jonathan, please go ahead.
Thanks very much. Hi, Penny. Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my question.
Hi, John.
Firstly, what's made you confident enough to remove the caveats around the 93 to 95 normalised combined ratio range for this year and the medium term? And secondly, just how do you feel about your expense ratio target given the pressure you're seeing on top line? What are the additional actions you could take on cost if required? Thank you.
Thanks, John. Why don't I take the first one and Neil can take the second one. Look, we've had a strong quarter earnings-wise. We're kind of feeling more positive about the overall economic environment and the position the UK is in generally in terms of vaccine rollouts and so on and so forth. We're through Brexit as well, and that seems to have gone from the motor market perspective relatively cleanly. So a number of factors that kind of been around for some time are kind of moving backwards, if you like. So as we look at how we started the year, we felt, you know, positive about reiterating the 93 to 95, and some of those cautions and uncertainties felt lower down the radar than they were before, hence the fact that we've adjusted the wording very slightly. Anything you want to add on that or pick up the expenses?
I agree with that, Penny. Let me take the last question. Thanks, John. So I think, as I said at the full year, increasingly confident of hitting our 20% expense ratio, and I don't think anything in Q1 has changed that. In fact, actually, we've had some good progress during the first quarter. Penny's mentioned the motor system launch, which has gone faster than expected through this quarter, so that gives us confidence on the levers that gives us to generate sustainable cost reduction through that process. That's good. We've also made good progress on the property reorganisation we talked about at the full year. And there's a huge number of other initiatives going on across the group. And as we've said before, we won't stop looking. We'll keep on going. We'll keep on challenging ourselves on the right things to do. Even if it doesn't depend on the market, we'll keep on challenging ourselves. I think the other thing worth saying is that obviously the ratio is a function of both cost and revenue. And as you've seen in this set of numbers, where we have made transformational change, you're seeing the growth come through. So you've seen that in commercial, and that gives us confidence for where we're making change. In other parts of the group, we'll see the growth, which also support those expense ratio ambitions.
Brilliant. That's very clear. Thank you very much, both.
Thanks, John. Kathy, have we got any other questions on the line?
Yes, sure. So now we have a question from Freya Khan from Bank of America. Freya, please go ahead.
Hi, Freya.
Hi, can you hear me? Sorry.
Hi, yes, we can.
Hi, good morning. Two questions, please. Could you guys give us some quantitative steer on what sort of frequency benefits that you saw in Q1? Would you be tracking ahead of the current 93% to 95% combined ratio target? And secondly, just on expenses again, so you guys previously guided to less than £700 million in 2021, but last year you said that that was at risk. How are you tracking now versus that target? Thanks.
Why don't I talk to frequency and then I'll head over to Neil for expenses. So frequency, what have we seen? I mean, as in the previous lockdowns, clearly there's been a lot more driving on the roads, and that has driven kind of reduced frequency. What we saw as we went across last year is that, you know, in Q2 frequency was down to, I don't know, maybe a third of what it normally is, maybe broadly. And it crept up as we moved through the year and then reduced a little as we came into the lockdown in Q4. It stepped down again. Apologies, we're having technical issues, but I'm not quite sure at which end, but I think I was halfway through frequency. So broadly, what we're saying, so across last year, big dip in frequency in Q2, and it carried on creeping up all the way through the year, eased off a little bit in Q4. It never got anywhere near pre-pandemic levels. And in Q1, it dropped down again, but not as far as it did in Q2 last year, but very materially down. So what does that mean? It means we start Q1 with kind of positive earnings compared with what we would have expected otherwise, if you like. So we start the year well. I think in terms of whether we beat 93 to 95, there's a lot of the year still to go. Clearly the premiums reduction earnings will start flowing through at the back end of the year. But we're feeling very confident in the range, and we'll see how we traverse through the second half as to whether we beat that or within that track. Neil?
Yes, on cost questions, so the £700 million target we set back at the Capital Markets Day or 18 months ago, what we've said since then is that COVID did delay or push to the right some of the initiatives that we had in place at the time we made the target. But at the full year, I said that we would expect to be on kind of run rate of £700 million by the end of this year. So if you take that and say, well, last year we were 722, it will be at the run rate at the end of this year, kind of expecting cost to be somewhere between the 700 and the 722 we had last year, if that makes sense.
Brilliant. Kathy, we've got another question.
Sure. So now we have a question from Greg Patterson from KBW. Greg, please go ahead.
Morning, Greg.
Hello, everybody. How are you doing? Good, good. Two questions. One is the FCA pricing review has put a headwind on motor rate for a couple of years now. I was wondering how far we've gone to complete that journey. In other words, will we see rate headwind continue for the remaining three quarters this year? And interesting, will it happen, you know, will we see further rate headwind next year? And that's my first question. And the second one is you're carrying very strong positive rate in commercial. I was wondering if we should expect that to continue for the remaining three quarters of this year. Thank you.
Okay. So PPR, I'm not sure I'd articulate it quite the same as you do. So why don't I do where we are on pricing practices for a second and then reflect what I think is really happening in the motor market, because I'm not sure those two things are quite as linked as you articulate them at the moment. So pricing practices, where are we? As we said at year end, I think we're kind of feeling confident of our preparations. What's happened, how do we feel about ourselves? Well, we think because of the combination of our diversified business model, the actions that we've already taken across the, you know, the last 3 years or so. I mean, we're ready and pretty well placed to win in a post-pricing practices market. And we think a transformation is all about tailored propositions and market-leading efficiency and pricing is still the right one. And having brands with strong service and so on are all pretty critical in a market that potentially has lower levels of shopping. And what's happened in PPR since we last spoke in the last 8 weeks? Well, not a huge amount. The FCA put the timing back, which still means it's tight, but it's much more deliverable. It's, you know, it's kind of possible to achieve it now, I think, whereas before it wasn't. They haven't moved their date of issuance, so I still expect the regs to come out at the end of this month. And I know from talking to the FCA that they're really keen to hit that deadline, so I think they'll be doing everything within their power to achieve that. But the other thing that's happening is, you know, we continue to prepare. So, you know, whether it's defining internally how we, you know, look at the various fair value tests, whether it's building the algorithms that mean we don't let a price out of the door that isn't compliant, or whether it's building the various optimization models and so on that will let the traders make their choices as we move through that environment. All of that work is going well, making good progress. So we need the final guidance to know exactly how we will navigate and how we'll choose to navigate, because there's still some pretty material questions out there, for instance, whether or not non-cash incentives are allowed. We're busy, as some others are anyway, trialing Amazon vouchers and so on and so forth in the market to see what the response is, so we prepare the ground for those options should they still be in the original, you know, the end legislation. But actually, I think as we sit here today, we're confident in our preparations and we await the final rules. Now, in terms of whether you can see that in the market or not in price, possibly in home, you can see a bit of it because I think there's not a lot of inflation going through in the home market. And certainly for us, some of that is because we've been making adjustments on the way on conduct pricing, which we flagged before. And we don't know, but we suspect there may be others in the market. So I think in that market, you can see it. I think in motor, the dynamics are different. And why don't I sort of step back a little bit, Greg, and talk about what I think we're seeing in the motor market, because I think that pricing practices is actually only a small, you know, a relatively small component of that at the moment. So, if, you know, what's actually going on in Q1 and actually through large swathes of last year? Well, you've got reduced claims and clearly an earnings tailwind, but as that reduces the input costs in the market quite materially, it's putting pressure on top-line rate. And our approach as ever in that period is to look out over the duration of the policy at frequency and at severity expectations and to price accordingly. And when we do that, we've ended up with GWP down around 10%, pretty much in line with the market. About half volume, about half average premium due to pricing reductions and mix, less new cars on the road, that sort of thing. But compared to a market off around 8%, we're off 5%. So we've given up a bit of competitiveness, which you can see in the IFP dropping by 1% to maintain the quality of the book. Now, what's happening now? Well, I think, as we said, our consumer intelligence data shows that pricing's flattened in April in the market. We're putting some price through. Clearly, some others in the market are putting some price through as well, which is good to see. And that's not surprising because of the frequency increases through the rest of the year, which have been the dominant factor, I think, driving pricing changes over the last sort of 12 months or so. As though that frequency picks back up, then the severity inflation that we know is happening underneath but is currently kind of outweighed by what's happening on frequency, that severity inflation will start to show through, I think, more clearly. And I think what you're seeing in the market, Greg, is that it's kind of a large range of pricing approaches across the market. And I think when you read people's year-end results, you could sort of see and feel that happening. And the reality is, not, you know, this is a data-driven market. We all look back at historic data and project forward. At the moment, it's very difficult to do that with any certainty. So it's a much more hypothesis-less view of what frequency is going to do. And I think that sort of those hypotheses are probably creating a greater spread on pricing than they normally do. And as we move through the rest of this year, I'd kind of expect to see people getting more and more data points on what customer behavior and driving behavior is actually doing. And I think that will narrow the spread of those choices. Any which way, as frequency levels sort of kind of start to normalize, wherever their new normal is, that severity inflation will start to show through and put upward pressure on rates. We as we've always said, have a claims advantage. We've reduced price less than the market, so we feel pretty good about where we're positioned coming into those changes and pretty confident. So I think when I sort of reflect back on your question, I apologise, it's a long-winded answer. I think in motor, Greg, that the factors that are, you know, around frequency and severity at the moment are stronger than kind of a positioning into pricing practices, just because the frequency effects are so material, I think. Whereas in home, where you're not seeing those kind of same scale of frequency effects, difficult to know who's pricing for what reason, but I suspect there may be more sort of pre-PPR planning kind of going on there. That helps, and I apologise, it's a bit long-winded, but...
Yeah, that's fine. And then the second question was on commercial rate, whether we should see the strong rate that you're carrying continue for the next three quarters.
Yeah, I mean, look, we love the SME bit of the market. We think it's got real potential for growth and strong margins, and that's why we've been investing in it. And so it's really great to see kind of the results coming through after all the transformation work on technology and the improved pricing tools and the combination of those coming through. I think what are we seeing? I think certainly at the moment, as rates move up in the commercial market, there are more opportunities coming around than there have been in recent years. So more business is coming to the brokers than the brokers are looking at it and looking out across the market. And I think that's giving us certainly opportunities. And I think we're gaining the benefit of having given great service through the pandemic, and not all of our peers have been able to do that, I think. So we're definitely winning something there. I think in terms of what drives that going forward, well, I think we'll watch with some interest how the UK economy emerges from the lockdown and from the sort of various government support measures. But I have to say, we found the SMEs and our customers have been much more resilient than we could have anticipated coming into this. The team have got lots of ideas. They continue to run at the opportunities. So we're pretty optimistic. Whether it runs at 15%, all year, don't know. But we're pretty optimistic about the growth in that space over the coming periods.
Thank you.
Okay. Have we got any more questions?
Sure. So now we have a question from Thomas Bateman from Berenberg. Thomas, please go ahead.
Hi. Morning, Penny.
Hi,
Neil. Hi, you both doing well. Just on commercial lines, could you just talk about how you like the market. Can you talk us about, how big do you think this addressable market is? How big do you think this business could be? Probably on track to beat 600 million this year. I don't know, 5 years down the line, is a billion of premiums in this line of business possible? And just turning to the additional garage that you acquired in Q1, how many more cars does one new garage allow you to service? And potentially, could you remind us of the cost advantage of servicing those vehicles yourself rather than by a third party? Thank you.
You're going to test me on what the throughput of our new garage is, because they vary quite a lot, is the honest answer to that. But across 21 garages, we're doing something around just just under 100,000 vehicles a year, to give you a sense. And what I can't tell you is, you know, what Newbury is relative to the others, which I will go and check after this call. But that should give you a feel. And on the cost advantage, is there a cost advantage? Yes, there is a considerable cost advantage between our in-house operations and our tier A suppliers. And we know there's a cost advantage across the market because there are various benchmarking tools across the market available. So we don't give out what that number is because it's commercially sensitive, but there is definitely a margin there that we can see. So that's kind of, and I guess just to give you some colour around that, why do you get advantages coming out? There's lots of things that you can do if you own the end-to-end process. So, you know, we can decide at the point of call whether we write off. We've got technology that runs between the repair centres and the claims function at the sort of point of notification that lets us assess the damage at that point, that, you know, can use the sort of tools and AI and then order parts from there so that when it arrives, a car arrives at the garage, all the parts are already in, ready to go, and that reduces the repair time and so on and so forth. You can, we can also invest in sort of technology, understanding car technology in those repair centres. So we've got a new technology centre opening in Stechford this year geared at understanding how to repair and recalibrate ADAS technology, understand EV technology, look at how to advance paint ovens and paint techniques so that you can contribute towards the net zero targets in terms of repairing cars, all sorts of things. And all of those things add up to being a really professional operation and being more cost advantaged and more effective as well as being greener. So there's definitely a benefit there. And I think as, you know, that benefit, if you like, tightens or becomes more important as volumes in the market start to increase again. So why don't I leave it there on car repair centres. In terms of commercial, how big, look, I mean, you know, the commercial market is huge. You know, we're a significant player at the very small end of the market already, and that's where we like to play. So we've talked about the possibility of moving slightly up the scale chain to expand the scale of that market, if you like, opportunity for us, perhaps sharing that risk with others en route, if you like. And we're certainly looking at that. But it still feels to us as there is a significant SME market out there in our heartland that we are getting very strong at targeting, have a really strong operation in, and we think there is plenty to go for. So I'll leave it there. I'm not going to put a pound sign on the market size. Anything that you used to run half is there anything you'd add, Neil? No?
Thank you, Vanny.
Brilliant. Thanks. Kathy, anyone else on the line?
Sure. So now we have a question from Ming Zhu from Panmure Gordon. Ming, please go ahead.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Ming.
Good morning. Good morning. Just two questions from me, please. And first, could you just give some color in terms of your motor premium? How what sort of percentage is that from electric vehicles? And how have you seen that market changing? And what have you done to preparing for further growth? And my second question, your buyback so far you've done just over 30 million, and it looks like it hasn't been very effective to your share price. I mean, would you consider, you know, at your half-year results for the second 50 million tranche, would you sort of reconsider for a special? Thank you.
Let me do a comment on EVs and then I'll let Neil comment on buybacks and so on and so forth. EVs, well, we think it's still a relatively small part of the market. I haven't got the number on me, but it's still a relatively small part. We know we are slightly heavier than other players in the market. We've had a strong relationship with Tesla from the get-go. And so we know that all the way along we've kind of run slightly ahead of the market on EVs. But I think more interesting is how you position for as that market, you know, that market is clearly going to grow pretty rapidly from here. And why have we kind of punched slightly heavy in EVs? All the way along we've been trying to gain learnings ahead of any flip, if, you know, heavy flip towards EVs. One of the reasons we've opened, the technology centre in Stechford is to enable us to train our engineers and our engineers from our Tier A suppliers and those who mend vehicles more broadly on the new technologies, because actually the repair cost profile is different for EVs than it is for other cars. And often with EVs, you get a lot of additional technology or increasingly you're seeing that in cars. All of those things affect repair costs and repair times. And we took the view that there wasn't the expertise in the market and enough breadth, so we needed to build that in-house, which is what we have done to prepare the way for that. So that's really how we're viewing kind of that overall, I think. And also doing our bit to try and work out how we can help that transition work successfully, across the UK, not just as an insurer, an insurer of those vehicles, but as a sort of corporate in the space. So we work with a number of other companies to try and see if we can find a way to make that transition smooth. So we stay close to it. It clearly has a slightly different risk profile that we're getting used to, but that's where the future lies.
On the buyback, yes, you're right, we're about £32 million through the first £50 million tranche buyback. I still think it's the right way to go, and in fact I'd say we're getting a better return on investment today on those shares than they were at the start of the buyback, so I think it's the right thing to continue.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Sure. So now we have a question from Oliver Skill from Deutsche Bank. Oliver, please go ahead.
Hi, Oliver.
Oliver, your line is open. Please kindly check if you put yourself on mute.
Sorry about that. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you. We're having one of those mornings, so we've only cut ourselves off once, so, yeah.
Right. First question is, the various pricing surveys show, I mean, the ABI, I think, at minus 8% year on year, but the ones that are more orientated towards new business pricing seem to be off sort of 10 up to 14%. Is that something you recognise, that the pricing gap between new and renewal pricing has actually widened over the last 12 months, despite the FCA new guide, the new rules that they're looking to introduce? And then the second question is, I'm thinking about the transformation programme on Churchill and Direct Line. How should we be thinking about, what should we be looking for precisely in terms of the benefits of that coming through in the motor account at Churchill and Direct Line over the remainder of the year?
Okay, so market statistics. So yes, I think some of the PCW market statistics are suggesting kind of 14% or something like that. I think there's probably two things going on in there, Oliver. One is, the new business market's been, testing, if you like, and will take the heat faster than the renewals market, I think, and you can certainly see some of that happening, I think, or feel some of that happening. And that's why we've lost a bit of competitiveness, and that's why kind of IPs have come off a little bit, because we've drawn our line in a slightly different place to some others, it looks as though. I think the other thing you have to watch, though, about those statistics is there is a mixed factor in them that isn't stripped out. So when you're losing kind of newer cars from the market, and in particular young drivers from the market because they can't come into the market, whilst that has a pretty muted effect on the overall book when you include renewals and so on as the ABI do, that has a more marked effect on new business, on the new business market in relative terms. So I suspect those, so we recognise the 14s and 15s and so on and so forth, absolutely. But I think you should be a bit wary of believing that's the automatic price coming out on a risk-adjusted basis, if you like. I think that number is nearer the ABI sort of space. So that's that one. And then in terms of transformation, yeah, the benefits come through in layers at different times. What do I mean by that? So those of you who made the trip to Doncaster, you may remember Gus talking about the transformation and what it delivers in terms of pricing benefits and how it works. And one of the things we talked about there is the fact that on our old models, you had kind of your pricing model and then you had to translate it almost twice to get it actually into the market and deployed. And in those translations, we lost a load of granularity that was intended from the original model. So just by switching on new business, that benefit starts to come through. And so, you know, if you like, the intention of your original pricing tools is deployed much more accurately into the market. So that's benefit one, I think. Then there are other benefits that come through on pricing which can come through, are available to you relatively immediately. So what do I mean by that? You're able to bring in new sets of pricing data that we were more restricted on before. You can affect pricing changes faster in the market than we could have done before. You can bring new product tweaks and changes and enhancements on more straightforwardly, faster, and more cost-effectively than before. So there are a number of things that, as things evolve, that enable us to maneuver faster, if you like. And that may well be important as we come into pricing practices where nobody will know on day one exactly where the market's going to land. So actually being flexible and maneuverable is going to be a pretty key thing. And then on top of that, you've got what I call the operating efficiencies. And in that space, you get some benefit straight away as the book builds up because, run costs and mippage and those sorts of things. But actually, the big benefits are around headcount reductions because you don't have to, do as much rekeying activity and so on, basic sort of operational stuff behind the scenes. And those costs effectively are reflected in the two site adjustments, closures or reductions that we talked about at a year-end results over a year ago. So reducing in Manchester and closing Ipswich, and effectively the 700 roles that we talked about there are the effect of the new platform rolling through largely. And that kind of builds up as the volume of policies build up over a year. So you should start to watch for those kind of expense benefits. And you should watch for either strengthening loss ratio, current year loss ratio improvements, or depending on where the market cycle is, we may deploy that back into growth as an alternative, but basically you should see it there.
Thank you very much.
Hopefully that helps, Oliver. Brilliant.
Yeah, very useful.
Kathy, any more questions?
Yes, we have a question from Sachin Lakhani from HSBC. Sachin, please go ahead.
Hi, morning all.
Hiya. Good morning.
Good morning. I had a question on home. It looks like you've, last year you sort of lost a little bit of policy count and sort of premium growth a bit lower behind market. It doesn't seem to be the case anymore. Are you done with the sort of fine-tuning prior to the FCA pricing review in home? And then my second question, it just goes back to the motor pricing environment. Last year was a pretty stellar result for the industry. This year will probably still be a pretty good result. It appears that some companies are putting prudent reserves away. Is there a case that maybe the market will be softer given the fact that there may have been a little bit of over-earning over the past 18 months? Just getting a view of that. Thank you.
Okay, home first. So I think the where were we at year end? We were sort of saying IFP's increasing sort of GWP less so broadly because the average premium's dropping because a lot of the growth is coming from a price comparison site, and from memory, Direct was pretty flat at that point. So what's been happening over the last quarter? Well, new business sales on own brands are up about 14%. Retention's up as well. The market is pretty buoyant, and you can see that in the news with house sales and so on and so forth, so that the home market remains pretty buoyant overall. So overall, kind of premiums up 3.6%. I think IFP's around 5 year on year. So you're seeing growth. You're seeing growth, strong growth in direct, but stronger still growth in price comparison site business. So, and what's going in there? Well, sure, we're being kind of competitive on price. We're marketing pretty hard as well. We've had some good deals running, I think, with some of the price comparisons. So it's kind of running on all cylinders, if you like. You've seen average premium coming off by around 3.5%, I think, and some of that is kind of pricing action. So we still continue to have some pricing actions in the market to be competitive, but also little bits of stuff going on around what we call our contract pricing, which is, as we've always said, we keep tightening the tails, and that process continues. And we'll continue all the way through the year. But probably the biggest effect in the average premium is the channel mix effect, which has been kind of happening for a couple of years now. So I think when you look across the market, I think the market's probably not putting a lot of pricing inflation through at the moment. And my guess is there's a bit of a mixture of there is some lower input costs. So claims have been down through the various lockdowns. And so people may be anticipating that continuing for a while with, you know, home working continuing for many and so on and so forth. So you may be seeing some of that. You may be seeing a little bit of positioning pre-PPR. Difficult to tell what choices people are making. And for us, you're seeing a bit of channel mix as well going on. So a little bit of all of the above, I think, in the home market.
Sorry, just on your own brand growth, you say you're a bit more competitive now. At the end of the year, what does that do to your back book then if you're being a bit more competitive on your new business price?
Well, I think there's two bits in the sort of back book story. Three if you include partner brands in there, but two main bits. One is what's happening in the tails, and we've said for some time now that we've been at the 5-year tenure, checking every policy that we're comfortable that the margins that we're writing are appropriate, we're happy with those. And so we've been kind of happy with that position for some time, and therefore the overall value we're offering in the product. And that tail kind of still we tighten and tighten, but for us, we feel is pretty much there. Obviously, what the FCA pricing review does is more than that, though. It says any pricing step-ups, basically, through that period that aren't risk-based need to come out. So you've still got a levelling up process to do over the first handful of years. I think there's very little first-mover advantage in people running into that flat, if you like. So I would be surprised if you see a huge amount of that happening in the market. I think you can see the odd product out there where people are starting to put product out there that does that. So I think you'll see on day one of pricing practices, I'd be surprised if there isn't still a leveling process that has to happen across the market on those early years. People may be in different places on the journey they've gone on what I would call the tails in the outer years. Okay. And the second question has completely escaped me now. I'm sorry about that. Can you remind me?
I can remind myself now. yes, it's on the motor pricing environment. The sort of fact that people had to over-earned over the last 18 months, and and reserves have been sort of quite prudent as well. Does that just soften the cycle for longer this time around?
I think this is all about really think this is all about input costs, really driven by input costs. So the materiality of the shift of frequency is outweighs kind of pretty much anything else, if you like, in terms of scale. And I think I personally think the key indicator is, you know, where people will be assuming that that motor frequency ends up. And so we are certainly looking closely at what both the behavior of our drivers, our customers are doing, but also some of the indicators around what the economy will be doing, how much work from home people will be doing, whether it's likely to be a staycation or a European holiday year, all of those things. I think are the dominant factors, certainly in our thinking. We don't, when we look at pricing, look back at how much money we made in motor in month X or month Y, and therefore we can reinvest that in price. That's just not how we think about it. We look forward at what we think the input costs on a policy will be and what margins we need to make and how competitive the market is in that context, and that's how we make our pricing calls. Can't speak for the decisions that others make, but I still believe that the biggest single influence here is what's going on in claims costs today and over the forthcoming year.
Thank you very much. Super detailed. Thank you.
Thanks. Cathy, next question.
Sure. So now we have a question from Alexander Evans from Credit Suisse. Alexander, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Hi, Neil. Morning. The sort of risk mix angle that you talked about before, is it possible to give a steer on how much is related to sort of the closing of the economy and none of these new drivers relative to how much of that change is related to what's being passed through on frequency? And then secondly, if I just look on quarter on quarter, it looks like your motor gross written premiums are actually up 1% versus what we're seeing in the market with various indices saying sort of down 6 or you know even 15. So is it possible just to give a little bit of an explanation of this and if you're seeing a sort of improvement there quarter on quarter?
I'm just puzzling on the last question. Let's do the first one because I think I followed that one. In terms of our kind of what's going on GWP and so on and so forth. So we've got a 10% fall. About half of that is volume. About half of that is average premium. And very broadly, it's slightly difficult to unpick, but very broadly, I'd go about half of that's probably risk mix and half of that's kind of pure pricing effects. You'll be within, you know, 0.5% either way, I suspect, if you do that. But that's the kind of shape. Neil, you look as though you followed the numbers better than I did on the second part of the question. So,
I think you're comparing Q1 motor to Q4 motor premium. And you're right, it's up slightly on Q4. I wouldn't overread too much because Q4 tends to be a slightly lower quarter at market premium, at the market level, than the other quarters.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Cathy?
So now we have a question from Ash Musadi from JP Morgan. Ash, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning, Penny. Good morning, Neil. Just one question I have, actually. I mean, you mentioned on the FCA review that there is not much happening on the motor side at the moment, whereas it feels like people have started adjusting on the home side. I mean, what are you doing at the moment? I mean, how much have you adjusted either your pricing or your expectations around FCA? What would be your base case expectation where we are going towards would be some good reminder for us. Thank you.
Look, I mean, I think in motor, I've been clear, our focus is on a frequency, severity, and so on and so forth. And, you know, just to, just reminder, we don't yet know what the PPR rules are, so we don't actually know how to trade that through the market because we don't know what the lines are, that the FCA wants us to check. So we can do some directional stuff, which, and remember, the kind of biggest issue area from the FCA review is home. So it's home and motor included in, but in terms of the historic back books and so on, because of the stickiness of the accounts, home is the area that kind of with the most issues in. So when I say, we've been public all the way along about what we are doing in the home book to make sure that we are dealing with the tails of that, we continue to do so. I can't tell you, I don't have the magic insight as to what other people are doing in the market and how they construct their prices. But all I would say is there doesn't look to be a lot of inflation going through the home book at the moment, and that may be people adjusting pricing. It may be simply that there are a few less claims coming through. So I don't know. So I can't speak for what others are doing directly and why they're making the pricing choices they are. So, clear what we've done on home, and we continue to take that path. We think that in the long run, the book will be stickier post-PPR. So we see little downside in the market at the moment about being competitive ahead of that, as long as our long-term tails are moving in the right direction, and that's the way we're thinking about it. And motor, just focused on other things at the moment.
Sure, that's very good. Thank you.
Thanks. Kathy.
Thank you. So now we have the final questions from Andrea van Amden from Peel Hunt. Andrea, please go ahead.
Hi, Andrea.
Good morning. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning. Just a quick question around the rebates you've been providing in the motor market since the second quarter of last year. Could you maybe highlight your plans of unwinding these rebates? Is this one-on-one with mileage driven, or is there something else I need to think about? And how sticky do you think these rebates will be in the remainder of the year? Thank you.
Yeah, we've offered, what have we done with it? So over the course of the middle of last year, I can't remember the exact date, actually, we offered pretty much all our customers a rebate, and we gave all of those numbers a kind of a year end. But what have we done as we've come into this year? We have done two things. One is we've made it permanently possible for DL customers to flex their mileage through sort of mileage management, money back proposition, and we see that as part of the direct strategy, if you like. I've talked before about tailoring product to individuals. Some of that is having components of product like we do on DL4B, where you can tailor around someone's business. Some of that is creating more sort of more modular products in a personalized space, but actually, people being able to tailor their own motor policy around their own mileage and allowing that to flex over time, we consider that something that is entirely appropriate and consistent with the brand. So that's a kind of permanent offering. Maybe 10-15% of the book has taken that up, something like that. We've also offered, because of the lockdown and because of the fact that they don't have that kind of proposition, we've also offered some of our Churchill customers and PCW customers refund opportunities, if you like, or the opportunity to take a refund if they think it's appropriate through the lockdown. And thus far, something like 1.6 million has been refunded on that as a result, and around, I think, 300,000 has gone to charity. We give a charity option as well. When we do that. So that's sort of the scale of the refunds overall, I think.
All right. Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Kathy, is that the last question? Yeah.
Yeah, so we currently have no further questions. And please, Penny, please conclude today's call.
Brilliant. In which case, I'd say thank you to everybody for your time and look forward to seeing you all soon.